We're recording. Good morning, everyone. It is 8:31. We will call this meeting to order. I'd just like to remind everyone to please mute or turn off your electronic devices. Please note for the record that our Attorney General Mark Harris is present. And then I would like to begin by reading the mission statement of the Arizona State Veterinary Board. The Veterinary Board protects the health, safety, and welfare of the general public, as well as the welfare of animals, by enforcing the licensing standards prescribed by statute for the licensing and regulation of veterinarians, veterinary technicians, veterinary premises, and animal crematories. Okay, Dr. James could do the roll call for us.
Dr. Byrne? Absent. Ms. Krieger?
Here.
Ms. Frost?
Here.
Dr. James is here. Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Thompson is absent, and Dr. Wright.
Here.
Okay, we have a quorum, small but mighty crew. So we're gonna start off with our initial investigative review, and we're gonna start with number 4, which is 24-101 in regards to John McWhorter, DVM. And Tracy, if you can read the summary.
Okay, case 24-101, the complainant is Mackenzie Freak. Respondent is John McWhorter, DVM. On January 25th, 2024, Winnie, an 11-month-old female dachshund, was presented to respondent on emergency due to vomiting and possible foreign body ingestion. Radiographs revealed that the dog had a foreign material present. Respondent discussed the findings with complainant's mother that the material may pass or cause a blockage. The dog was discharged with syringing and recommendations to follow up with a primary care veterinarian in 5 to 7 days. On January 28, 2024, the dog was presented to arise on emergency due to progressive vomiting. Complainant initially declined all diagnostics and treatments. However, any further discussion she provided approval. Diagnostics revealed foreign body obstruction with concerns of GI perforation and peritonitis. Complainant declined treatment and surgery and sought out a second opinion. The dog was presented to the Scottsdale Veterinary Clinic for a second opinion. Dr. Gorham did not feel comfortable performing the surgical explore due to the complexity of the case and referred the complainant to a boarded surgeon. The dog was presented to AVEC. Dr. Hu evaluated the dog and recommended emergency surgery with them or through the surgical service. A surgeon from SBSS performed an abdominal laparotomy on the dog and found multiple perforations along the duodenum. Due to the poor prognosis and decreased quality of life, complainant elected to humanely euthanize the dog. Complainant expressed concerns that respondent did not disclose the recommendations of the radiologist to repeat radiographs in 4 to 8 hours to reassess the dog's GI tract for possible obstruction. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board find ARS 3222-3211, gross negligence, failure to perform surgery on the dog, which resulted in harm to the dog. Respondent's narrative did not reflect the information documented in the medical record, and failure to provide adequate instructions if the dog did not respond to respondent's recommendation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you. We have both the respondent and the complainant available in this case, so we're going to start with Dr. McWhorter and his attorney. If you'd like to come forward. Good morning. Thank you for being here. I can give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you, Chair, members of the board. This is Flynn Carey, counsel for Dr. McWhorter. As the board may recall, as Tracy explained, this is involving a puppy that ate plastic irrigation on a Tuesday, brought into licensee's practice on a Thursday. IC made a finding of gross negligence. We're asking the board to either remand this back to IC or reject that finding. We provided you on June 13th a supplement where we provided you some literature about the standard of care. We also noted that licensee had back surgery and was recovering, so he was unable to participate in IC, and I think that was one of the reasons they may have made the finding that they did. The patient in this case had eaten irrigation bits and then was not eating kibble that day. However, However, the next day it did start eating again, and that morning of actually being seen at urgent care, it was eating treats. So consistent with the standard of care in the literature, licensee did get imaging. He got left lateral, which is one of the recommendations when there's a foreign body obstruction. And they did find bits distributed throughout the GI tract. There didn't appear to be a blockage at that time. He did send the images for read by a radiologist. The radiology report and his documentation both clearly state imaging within 4 to 8 hours. It did not say to bring it back within 5 to 7 days as the only recommendation to send to primary care. It's very clear in both reports, 4 to 8 hours of imaging. The caretaker was informed about surgical intervention, and that's both that's in the radiology report, and it's also in the documentation by Dr. McWhorter. When the caretaker asked about more conservative management, he did do indicate that follow-up imaging could be an option. We did provide you information as well, we did provide you an avowal, which if we had to go to a formal or we went back to IC, there is a screen capture in which either the vet tech or the staff did send a chart within minutes after his call with the caretaker. I think the issue here is there may be some deficiencies in that follow-up call and the charting of the follow-up call, and that's where I think the concern was. But there was an inpatient and urgent care consult. Surgery was discussed as an option, as was a more conservative approach of waiting a few hours. I'd ask the board to think about really two things here. Even if you as an individual clinician would have gone harder at the surgical option, there's a comment by the complainant that this was undersold, that surgery was undersold. The issue is not what you would have done, it's what does the standard of care support, either the 48-hour imaging or does it support surgery? And both options are viable according to the research. It's not a violation, even if there's a belief that it was undersold. The board doesn't necessarily regulate discretion by a clinician. It doesn't bind you by saying you can't offer multiple options. Second of all, if you believe that surgery was the better option, your standard is gross negligence, so you would have to demonstrate or you'd have to make a finding that not only did he deviate from the standard of care, but he grossly deviated from the standard of care. What we would suggest is there are some charting concerns here, but what there's not is any sort of failure for him to do the initial step, which is the radio, get the radiographs, do the 3-image radiograph, which he did, recommend the 4 to 8 hour review, offer surgical option, also offer conservative management. You can't force it's not like human medicine where you can sometimes compel someone to get a procedure. If a caretaker or an owner doesn't want the animal to receive surgery, you can't force that animal to receive surgery. I think there's also some evidence here of the caretaker's reticence of surgery, given that she did make at other places with other providers, did decline certain treatment and certain care. And it only was until it was insisted upon by a board-certified vet that she actually agreed to surgery. So I think there's ample evidence here that the actual care provided was good. I think if we wanted to have a concern, it was that phone call, the follow-up phone call wasn't charted as effectively, but we know very clearly the radio report was read, or at least provided to the caretaker soon after. We also did include the vet tech, her statement that did say she did hear Dr. McWhorter reading the radio report, which clearly has a surgical recommendation. So our suggestion would be that this does not rise to the level of a deviation or discipline. We would also suggest if you still have concerns, in order to give Dr. McWhorter the benefit of the doubt due to his surgery, where he was unable to participate, kick it back to IC, let them take another look at it. As always, licensee is present, can answer questions.
Okay. All right. Thank you both. You may step back.
Thank you.
We'll hear from Peggy now. Okay, so it looks like both Mackenzie and Kimberly are here. Are you both planning to speak or? Okay, come on forward. Thank you both for being here. If you would please state your name for the record.
Sure, my name is Kimberly Rollins. I am This is my daughter, Mackenzie Farrick.
Okay. Thank you for being here today, and we're so sorry for the loss of Winnie. She was a really cute dog. I can give you 5 minutes to address the board.
Okay. Obviously, we are unrepresented, so I'm not sure where to start, but I will say that Dr. McWhorter has completely misrepresented, and those statements that were made by his attorney are false, are demonstratively false. The reason we went to the urgent care and did not seek out my daughter's primary care that was with the intention of being concerned that the dog needed surgery, because they realized that she had ingested those materials. And my daughter and her fiance were unable to take the dog to the appointment that early in the morning, so I opted to do that. I met with Dr. McWhorter, and that was the very first thing. I was like, does she need surgery? We're concerned. She's not eating. She's not using the restroom. She's in general malaise. And he started feeling her and palpitating her, and he's like, well, I don't feel anything hard in her stomach. Let's go ahead and do an x-ray. I got permission from my daughter's fiance to be able to do that because they were covering the expenses. So he did that, and he said, you know, what we want to do is, I see this all the time, and you said that specifically. He goes, she's going to be fine. I see this all the time, and we'll wait until we get the findings back, but I'll give you a call in about an hour or so. And he said, just, we'll find out what's going on, but everything's going to be okay. So I asked specifically, does she need surgery? And that was never indicated. We looked at, he showed me the x-ray when they took it, and you could see all the stuff going through her entire intestinal tract from her stomach going all the way through. And he specifically did not say that she needed to have surgery. He did not say that she needed any type of, to come back within hours or 48 hours or any of that. He said she's going to be fine. The only thing is you might see once she starts to pass some of this is she may have some blood coming out of her rectum, which would be caused by just a little bit of the hard plastic moving. And I have the text communications between myself and my family that I provided that clearly show that we felt like we left there thinking everything was going to be okay. There was never talk of cost or anything because my daughter would have paid. They paid thousands of dollars for that wonderful dog. There's no way that she wouldn't if they would have said that she needed to have surgery immediately. That's why we went there. So we left, and Dr. McWhorter did call several hours later, and he started to tell me that he did not read the findings at all. He said everything looked to be in line with what we talked about today. She needs to just watch her for the next 5 or 7 days, and as long as everything seems to be improving, then she should be okay. And he said that she needed to be on Pepcid and to just monitor her. And I said, okay, well, my daughter is the one that's, you know, it's her dog. My daughter's finishing up PA school, so she's got a year left. So I said, talk to her about the dosages and things like that, because she was also giving the dog anti-nausea medicine, which he also had recommended. And so I text my daughter and said, hey, just know that Dr. McWhorter's going to be calling you, so pick up the phone. And she did. And then she can relay. My understanding was that he told her that everything, but that's hearsay, so you can ask her questions about that. And that's when we just kept watching, and she didn't get better. And then my daughter and fiance, I was checking every day, going, hey, is the dog doing okay? Things weren't really improving. She did defecate once, so I guess we kind of thought that as a positive. But then I found out that they went to another emergency vet. Well, they wanted a second opinion, not because my daughter said, no, we're not going to perform surgery, but because it was so starkly in contrast to what had happened. She needed to figure out what to do, and she thought that seeking a second opinion would make sense. And they didn't understand that there's different types of vets. I didn't understand that either, or ones that perform certain surgeries or different licensing, I don't know. So it wasn't because of the money, otherwise we would have never even gone to the emergency room vet in the first place. And so ultimately the dog ended up passing away, and now not only has my daughter lost her dog and we've had to go through this process, now we're having to sit here and listen to somebody that not only was negligent in their behavior and reeling of the information of the criticalness of what was happening to our dog, we now have to sit here and listen to somebody that is being completely unethical and misrepresenting what happened, which I find absolutely gross negligence on top of that.
Thank you. Mackenzie, did you have anything to add?
And
we have all the literature that you provided, so you don't have to if you...
Okay, I mean, yeah, just to second everything. I took my dog to the vet thinking that she needed surgery initially. That's why we took her, is because really there's something wrong. She's probably going to need surgery. Like, that's crappy, you know, like, oh no. And when Dr. McWhorter had called and basically said, yeah, no, she's great. Like, you just need to watch her. Nothing's really concerning. Like, yeah, she has some stuff in her intestinal tracts, but totally fine. She'll pass it. Just keep with the Serenia, keep with the Pepcid, watch her, follow up in 5 to 7 days. And I only checked his soap after she had passed. They had sent it over, but he relayed everything verbally, and so I was just like, okay. The radiologist's plan was never reiterated to me, ever. If I had known that the radiologist had recommended, hey, maybe we should check to see if it's moving or not, or the obstructions are moving or not, then I would have absolutely paid for that, brought her back, and done it again. And I think the thing is, you know, even if she was past a point where she wouldn't have been able to live after that point, she still suffered an additional 3 days because he never relayed that information. He never recommended surgery. I mean, she didn't deserve that.
And then to explain what happened when he called and you told him that she passed.
He had called me the day after she had passed, asking me how she was. And I had told him that she passed away. And he hung up on me. He was like, oh, sorry, and just ended the call.
I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you both. I think we don't have any questions, so you can go ahead and step back, okay? And Dr. Wright, you are the lead on this case.
Yes, thank you.
Don't mess me up with my last meeting.
So,
okay.
Okay. Get on your room. So, I know I have a lot of questions to follow up on this. There's going to be a lot of kind of back and forth. So, I don't see a need to send this down to the IC. We love the IC. They're amazing, but we're the ones that make the decisions. We can do the interview just as much as they can.
Right.
So I'm going to make a motion to move this to informal.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to move case 24-101 to an informal. There's no further discussion.
I think the only thing to add to that is what was being asked to move it back to informal, or to, excuse me, the IC was, they can make a recommendation, but that's not the orders, that's not the finding
right.
of fact, or, you know, those types of things. So it's simply a step in our process, and if we, like, their recommendation is not our decision necessarily,
right.
even though they do a great job and we get more information, we can still get more information, like you said, in an informal. So.
Well, I appreciate that there was, a medical issue with
yeah.
the doctor as well.
Sure.
This happens sometimes, and you know, that's why we allow people to join via phone or, you know, something. But again, I don't think it ultimately didn't change anything where I felt like we needed to go backwards on this either. So thank you, though,
yeah.
Nikki, for bringing that up.
We would not get any more information if we sent it back.
No.
And we're going to get all the information.
Yeah,
cool.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Again, the ICs are amazing, but we're gonna ask all the questions we need to ask, and that wouldn't be a problem. So all the information will get out at that point. So.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, thank you all for being here. Now we're going to move down to number 8, 24-105, in regards to Heather Molander, DBM. And Tracy, if you can read the investigative committee report summary, please.
Yes. Case 24-105, the complainant is Aaron Yeager, the respondent is Heather Molander, DBM. On February 9, 2023, Dublin, a 13-year-old male domestic long-haired cat, was presented to respondent for a dental procedure. Before the dental procedure, physical exam and blood work were done. Respondent called complainant to get approval for an SDMA and a hyperthyroid medication. After respondent advised complainant of the risks of anesthesia, complainant approved moving forward with the dental procedure and SDMA. Dental procedure was performed and the cat was and the cat had an uneventful recovery. Respondent recommended the cat have a blood pressure check in 1 to 2 weeks. On November 11th, 2023, the cat presented to Dr. Zoe Browning for coordination. Diagnostics were performed and complainant elected for main euthanasia. Complainant feels that the anesthesia used on February 9th, 2023 sped up the cat's kidney failure. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Okay, thank you, Tracy. We have both the respondent and the complainant here, so I'm going to bring forward the respondent first, Dr. Molander, if you'd like to come forward, and your attorney.
Dr. Molander is not present.
Okay. Just kidding.
Covering for Cody. Cody's
okay. Well, thank you both for being here. Please state your name for the record, and then I can give you 5 minutes to address the board.
Lynette Odom, on behalf of Dr. Molander.
Okay.
Dr. Heather Molander.
Great. Thank you. Go ahead.
Dr. Molander's care and treatment of Dublin in this case was reasonable under the circumstances. Dr. Molander's care of Dublin did not hasten Dublin's kidney failure, unfortunately. We ask that the board accept the IC's recommendation of a dismissal. Obviously, Dr. Molander is here if you have any questions, but we do not believe Dr. Molander acted in any way below the standard of care, and we do ask that you accept the board's, or sorry, the IC's recommendation. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Thank you both. You may go ahead and step back. And then Erin Yeager, if you'd like to come forward.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for being here today. If you would please state your name for the record.
Erin Yeager.
Okay. And we're sorry to hear that Dublin has passed.
Thank you. Okay. Let me just pull this up real quick. And first, I'd like to say thank you for allowing me to speak here today. From what I just heard, I would like to say that I do not believe, and I never said that I did believe, that Dr. Molander caused the death of Dublin. I think there are many moving parts in CKD. I know it's a progressive disease. However, I would like to focus on that specific day where she performed the dental. So I've just prepared a brief statement. I know I have a limited amount of time. Had a little story to tell you ahead of time, but we're just going to go right through that and move on. Let's see. Okay. So on February 9th, 2023, over a year ago now, and I found out this information after Dublin had passed, I collected all his records to see what I could have, as an owner, done better for him, right? I'm not trying to place the blame on anybody, not trying to get back at anybody. I've had animals in the past who have passed, and, you know, there's no natural causes of life. So Dr. Molander did not take the same care of Dublin. In her notes on that day that she stated she would take Dublin's health concerns into account while he was having his dental done. She called me after his levels were high on the CBC to get approval for the SDMA. Okay, I understand if you're not contacted, that could be a violation. I understand I'm probably not going to get a violation here, but maybe a little bit more oversight would be good. And I'll continue on to tell you what we got. I advised that I did not want the dental done if his levels were too high. So when she did not call back after the SDMA test and his levels were outside the normal range, I had no say in the matter as I was not advised of those results. And I remember speaking to her, and I know that in the notes on that day, in the Banfield notes, because they keep detailed records, I said, she described to me how her pets have CKD and she was familiar with it, and she's very sensitive to cats that have CKD. Totally understandable. Why didn't she call me back when the SDMA was out of range? Why didn't I get that second phone call? When his SDMA was out of range, she went and did an Oscar evaluation. Some people may not know what that is. I didn't know I was going to be speaking in front of everybody else, so sorry. I'm a little more nervous.
I don't know what it is, so
okay. I guess it's an evaluation the veterinarians do to see if it's okay for them to go under anesthesia, from what I understand. There's, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 different qualifications they have to meet. One of the qualifications is the phosphorus level. Phosphorus, if it's too high, it's showing the kidneys are, you know, diminishing. And on his evaluation, the question is his phosphorus level under a 5? It wasn't. It was a 6. However, or no, above a 5. And she put no, it was not above a 5. Per the CBC that day, his phosphorus level was a 6. Was it a clerical error? I don't know. You know, was it, I can't say. And I'm not here to accuse anybody of doing anything nefariously. However, it was not put in there correctly. So if the phosphorus level was high, his SDMA was high, not crazy out of range, but it was still out of range. Had I gotten that phone call, I would not have approved it. Dublin had many dentals before, you know, maybe 3 or 4. I had him for about 8 years. I don't know about his life before, prior to him. However, I never got that chance to say no, because I went with her professional opinion, said, okay, well, she's not calling me, everything must be good, they're just gonna move forward. In addition, administering fluids post-dental to Fletch's kidneys would have been beneficial. According to a recorded comment in the summation of the meeting that we had in May here, one of the veterinarians hearing this case stated that Dr. Melander, quote, did give Dublin fluids. Not much, but she did. Now, as most veterinarians probably know, and some I've spoken to since then, said you want to flush your kidneys as much as possible, especially if they're suffering from CKD. Apparently, that didn't happen. It was even admitted in the summation notes from last month. That says right there, she did not take care of Dublin as she said she would. No wonder he did not fully recover from the anesthesia until the next day, as is shown in my call at Banfield to see what's going on, because it's not happened with him before. Almost up, sorry. Since Dublin's kidney levels started increasing in 2021, they have been stable through the beginning of 2023. I might also add that he was not given solely prescription kidney food, and his numbers had not increased in those 2 years in my care, with him starting out with a CKD level 2. It is only after his dental in February until his next exam in August of the same year that his numbers nearly doubled. I cannot prove that dental made Dublin's health decline so quickly after, just as it cannot be proven that his diet was to blame. But what I can prove is that the Dr. Melander did not do Dublin justice on that day. She did not call to inform me of his failed SDMA. She falsified his phosphorus numbers, either purposely or not purposely, I don't know. And she did not flush his kidneys sufficiently after the dental. I will close with the fact that 3 separate veterinarians have either told me that they would not have done the dental to begin with, which Dr. Bids will. Or they would have called me to say, let's get Dublin's numbers down first and we can revisit the dental later. That did not happen. Dr. Melander did not have Dublin's best interest at heart, in my opinion. Is that a violation? Probably not, but it's an ethical question. On one of my last visits to Banfield, one of the techs, who's very familiar with me and familiar with Dublin, they all love him to death. He was just little tours of, yeah, he'll talk everything. They said, and they worked with her for some time, said Dr. Melander takes too many risks with her patients. I wish I had known that ahead of time. I would have not have gone through with it.
Thank you. You can go ahead and step back. And Dr. Wright, you are the lead on this case as well.
Yes, thank you. So I understand there's some communication errors going on here, but when I look at the medical record, I see that it appears to be adjusted for kidney disease. We didn't use ace promazine, we went and did dazolam, so it appears to be that it was taken into consideration. Like I said, the communication portion sounds like there's some issues going on there potentially, but is that really a board issue or is that a business issue? And looking at the medical record, looking at how things are going though, I don't see an actual issue with the way the dental was done, with the way the medications were given, with the way everything was performed. So,
can you talk about the phosphorus level that she mentioned? And obviously, being the non-vet, I don't know what that is.
So phosphorus is one of the indicators of kidney health and functionality. If we're having deficiencies in filtering stuff out, we have problems with phosphorus. One of the things with phosphorus is as it remains high, it becomes directly toxic to the kidneys, which elevates phosphorus again, which makes it higher, which makes it more toxic. So it's this vicious cycle thing going on there, which is why many of the, maybe all of the kidney diets have controlled phosphorus levels to try and bring that down. And we'll use sometimes phosphate binders in the intestine because you don't really need to absorb a whole lot of phosphorus. So that's where that's going to be coming in, is it's a kind of one of the markers and one of the indicators of kidney disease and functionality and progression.
Okay, but when she stated that the level came back and was supposed to be, did she say under 5 and it was 6, is mm-hmm. that, would that be a huge concern
yeah,
of her going under anesthesia?
Phosphorus as a predictor of kidney health, it comes into play later on in the disease.
Okay.
Particularly when they stop eating, because the elevation of phosphorus is one of the main components of them to stop eating, but as a predictor of kidney health at any particular time, it's way down on the list. Do you remember the creatinine at the time of that?
We were 2.
Just
so we're barely 2.5, I think.
2.5.
Back in August.
If you look at the IRIS, the International Renal Society, creatinine is number one on the list. We look at that. And then BUN can be affected a lot by a lot of other factors, diet and dehydration. So when you look down then, SDMAs are a very early predictor. I don't know that I've ever used SDMA as a predictor of whether I'm going to proceed with a procedure or not.
No, we really do not interpret SDMA still.
No. So
what do you do with it?
So with a creatinine still in the normal range, the phosphorus not really being an indicator,
okay,
that's where you try to look at these cases. And what was not mentioned is the benefits of a dental.
Well, that's what I'm going to say.
In a chronic renal, early chronic renal.
We could be sitting
disease.
Here going, she should have done the dental because she didn't do the dental. We now have these other issues, right? So,
right.
So it's a judgment call, I think, that the doctor has to make at that point in time as to whether to proceed or not. I think what we're hearing here is that the concern is the doctor made that judgment call without giving the owner the opportunity to hear the rationale behind why she was making those decisions. So I think that's the crux of the issue.
Yeah, I agree.
Right.
Which I agree, that's the problem, because again, it looks like we addressed everything like we were supposed to, but just didn't inform, or at least didn't have a full thinking of the minds going on there. Is that an actual violation, or is that just customer service issues?
Right.
And I think that falls into customer service issues based on our statutes.
I know, it's tricky relaying enough information to a pet owner, but also doing it in a way that they can understand.
And I would say that too, most of the time. I think what we have to take into account here is we had an owner that specifically said, if something's wrong, let me know. Okay. And clearly a very engaged owner that as a doctor I would have been overly communicating with, because I know this person wants to be engaged and wants to know what's going on. So I look at it a little bit differently, and I do think it's not customer service from the standpoint of, hey, we're running 15 minutes late on appointments, you're going to have a little bit of a wait,
yeah,
right? This is a medical issue with their pet. Like, this is not, to me, that goes away from customer service into more of, this is medical communication.
I would say yes if there was poor decision-making on this. The cat did do well through it. I mean, it still survived for a long time afterwards. And if we would have had an issue with the procedure, then I think we would have seen issues sooner than that.
I totally agree. I don't think that the procedure affected the outcome, right? Like, and I don't disagree with what the doctor chose to do. I disagree with the fact that the owner was not informed and didn't have the understanding of why we chose to go forward. It's not our call to be able to go forward on somebody's pet. It's our job to give them the information to make that decision. We can't make that decision for somebody. But you also have to help guide us.
But
you again, conversation and you could have said, look, I don't think these numbers are that bad. We don't typically use SDMA as a reason to move forward with surgery or not. We don't even really know what that number actually means and how it's going to track over time, right? It hasn't been out long enough. So there's a lot of things that could have been said to help this owner go, okay, they may have chosen to go forward with the surgery anyway. It was probably the right decision. So I think that's my issue. I don't know that I would necessarily say it's a communication issue that falls to a violation. I mean, maybe a letter of concern on being certain that you're bringing your pet owners along in the process, but I don't... I can see how they got
any knowledge of any potential kidney issues by the owner before this?
Yeah, we had
So she was aware of potential early renal. So,
but she educated herself on what's going on.
Exactly.
So she was staying on top of it, which is good.
And that's even more reason to be elevate your communication to the point.
And I agree. And that was my thing is, I agree that communication is the problem. Does it raise to the level of a violation, or would it be like a letter of concern? I have a hard time with a violation at this point, just because I just don't see violation issues going on here. I think a letter of concern wouldn't be the worst thing in the world there. But yeah, I agree. More communication would always have been better.
Yeah. Okay. So. All this discussion then?
Make a motion then to offer a letter of concern, issue a letter of concern for improving on communication with clients.
Dismiss.
Dismiss. Sorry, yeah.
Okay, so we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 24-105 and issue a letter of concern for communication to pet owners. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. We are now on item number 5, 24-102, in regards to Nathan Bernier Parker, DBM. And Tracy, if you would read the investigative committee report, please.
Yes, case 24-102. The complainant is Lorena Romero. The respondent is Nathan Bernier Parker, DBM. On December 30th, 2023, Maggie, a 4.5-year-old female pit bull mix was seen by respondent on referral due to acute onset of blindness. The dog had been evaluated by an ophthalmologist with no abnormalities identified. Therefore, prednisone was dispensed and a referral to a neurologist was recommended. Complainant declined respondent's recommended diagnostics except for the Ehrlichia PCR. Empirical treatment was started. Doxycycline was prescribed and it was recommended to continue the prednisone previously prescribed. On January 8, 2024, respondent relayed the negative PCR test to complainant. She reported that the dog's vision had not returned, but the dog was doing well. They discussed that the dog may be affected with immune-mediated optic neuritis, and the condition was an inflammation of the nerve. Thus, the prednisone was increased to 20 milligrams per day. On January 11, 2024, complainant reported the dog may be reacting negatively to the increased prednisone dose. Therefore, it was lowered to 10 milligrams twice a day, and omeprazole was prescribed. Respondent recommended complainant have the dog evaluated by her primary care veterinarian. The dog continued to decline. Therefore, an appointment was scheduled with respondent's associate for January 17, 2024. On January 14, 2024, the dog was taken to an emergency facility due to vomiting blood and respiratory issues. The dog was evaluated and eventually the complainant believes the dog's death was a result of an overdose of prednisone. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay. Thank you, Tracy. We have the respondent's attorney here.
Here to monitor, but I do want to point out that the prednisone dosages were appropriate.
Okay, thank you. We also have a complainant, Maria Romero, if you are here, if you would like to come forward. Thank you for being here today. We're so sorry for the loss of your pet. I can tell you are a very dedicated pet owner, so thank you. If you would state your name for the record, and then I can give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Okay. My name is Maria Romero.
Go ahead.
After the last hearing, these hearings are very helpful. It's the first time, and I hopefully am not in a situation and have to be here again. But it's been very helpful. I will have to agree with the recommendations that Dr. Bernier Parker is not negligent. That being said, I do think there was a lack of care and action because from the moment the recommendations were made on increasing the prednisone within 12 hours on being on the heightened dosage, she started emitting some concerning side effects. Every time something new came up, I would call it in, report it. When it got pretty bad, I think the last time I called was maybe that following Friday before her passing. She had gotten to the point where She couldn't move. She couldn't get up. She hadn't been eating or drinking for 2 days. Her stomach was distending. She had patches of fur coming off of her. I had called it in concern. So prior to that, the 3 days preceding to that, that she was on the increased dosage, every day I pretty much called and said, hey, she's exhibiting this. It's getting worse. It's getting worse. Should we taper her off? No, don't taper her off, is what I was told. Once she was passed off from Dr. Bernier Parker, I don't know who that other attendant doctor was, but someone was assigned because I was given a scheduled date for the following Wednesday. I don't know whether that doctor received messages or not, but anytime I called, they would say, those are normal side effects, just hang in there. Hang in there until the follow-up. Hang in there until the follow-up. Finally, I called Maggie's primary, and they're like, you know, if she was my dog, I'd take her to urgent care. So when I woke up the next day, she had nose blood coming out of her nose. At that point, you know, there's nothing more that you can kind of see. At that point, I think we all know that, hey, immediate action needs to be taken. So she couldn't get up. I had to drag that poor dog from the room to the garage, into the car, to get her to an urgent clinic, just to get her seen. They had put her on a ventilator. She was to try to see if they can at least help her breathe a little bit better. They were going to do additional diagnostics, but within a couple of hours, I got a call to go back to let me know that she is not improving anymore. She, you know, it's getting progressively worse, so they wanted to know if I wanted to continue to search and dig into and try to further do diagnostics to figure out what's going on. And so I asked them point blank, if she was yours, what would you do? They made the recommendation that at this point she was very far gone. Whatever had contributed to this had done so very quickly. And at this point, you know, we would just be delaying the inevitable and just having her suffer. So we made that call. So while I do agree that at that point, probably Dr. Bernier Parker had been moved off her case, there was still a lack of action. There was a gap in the handoff. There was a lack of either front desk communication to the doctor, or maybe the doctor said, hey, should she call back, we have a follow-up on this day. And it was, and the concerns and the escalating symptoms were never communicated. Again, that's just an assumption that I'm conjuring up because I don't know the details. But either way, she was under the clinic's care. To have no one say, hey, you know what, take her to an urgent clinic at any point. It wasn't until the day of her passing that they got the voicemail that said, you know what, let's taper her off that medication that might be in, you know, contributing to the to her condition. Too late by then, but so on my end, I think I would feel better if I knew there was a corrective action to ensure that proper handoff and proper care to an animal is still happening, even though she hasn't been seen by this other follow-up doctor at that point. She was still under the care of that clinic, in my opinion. So I just don't want that to happen to anybody else, just out of, I don't know, technicality, lack of a better word.
Can I have a clarifying question?
Sure, go ahead.
You mentioned that they had recommended, or that you went to your regular veterinarian.
Mm-hmm.
Was that based on recommendation from the clinic, or was that you just chose to go there because you weren't getting answers? I couldn't really understand. And do you recall when you actually went?
So her onset blind happened the day after Christmas. December 26th is when I noticed that I made an appointment to see her normal vet that I had already established. I only had her 3 months. I had adopted her in October. She'd come from an abusive home. Not that that relates to anything, but I only bring it up because the blindness, the ophthalmologist said, the blindness could potentially be, you know, head trauma that's just now catching up. Dogs can live with blindness healthy and fine. But still get this looked into. So I've gone to her regular vet, I believe it was the 27th of December. They did diagnostics, did blood work, valley fever, and a few others. Everything came back fine. He recommended, hey, you know, I can't find anything. Let's get her to an ophthalmologist. Took her to the ophthalmologist. they saw her, did some diagnostics, went back the following day to do additional diagnostics to rule out a potential, I forget what it's an acronym, what it's called, got ruled out. They're like, all right, so it's nothing on the eyes, blood works good, she seems healthy, but could be something neurological. Why don't you go see a neurologist on this? And that's kind of how that progressed. From there, you know, I just kind of kept everyone in the loop, from her primary to the ophthalmologist, from the point that she had been transferred over to the neurologist care.
I think I was more referring to after you saw the ophthalmologist and you started on the steroids, you had gone to the 20 milligrams, you had increased it to the 20, or you maybe you started on the 20 milligrams.
So the ophthalmologist prescribed her the 10.
And then you increased it. And that's
the
when
neurologist
the signs,
did.
The neurologist
yeah.
did. That's when the signs started.
Yep.
And then from there, you called in, you said, in your statement, you said you called in every day with
pretty
signs.
Mm-hmm.
During any of those calls, were you referred back to your primary veterinarian, and did you go to your primary
no.
veterinarian for the signs that you were seeing related to the steroids?
No, it was never recommended that I go back. I did call the ophthalmologist and her vet just to kind of keep them in the loop. And I asked, what do I do? And they're like, follow the instructions of the neurologist, because she's under their care right now. Just keep us posted. It wasn't until the Friday before she passed that I talked to her primary, and I'm like, listen, I'm really concerned. All I'm getting is hang in there until the follow-up. And that's when he's like, you know what? If she was my dog, I'd take her to an urgent clinic. It would see that kind of pushed me to, kind of gave me the green light that I wasn't kind of overreacting.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, are there any more questions for the complainant? Okay, you can go ahead and step back. Thank you for being here. Dr. James, you are the case lead.
Yeah, so, I mean, we have some slight inconsistencies in kind of what we hear and what we know as far as the follow-up. And I think that's the area that I'm centering in on, is this prednisone dose, right? We increased it, still within normal dosing ranges, but the dog started having side effects, or at least we believe it was side effects to the prednisone, may or may not have been. And I think that's where the question is were the right things done to help this owner through kind of the side effects that were starting to appear? And if they weren't side effects, to realize that this dog was declining and that things were getting considerably worse.
Right.
So I think that's the area that I would have the most concern about. I think the actual medical care and what was done all seemed normal. I didn't see anything there that was out of line. The dosage didn't seem to be out of line. So it's really similar to the last case, we're back on a communication issue with this owner, and it doesn't sound like the doctor was necessarily involved. It sounded like a lot of this went through the front desk staff. And so, you know, the question again, similar to the last one, is does that actually rise to a level of a violation if they're not communicating.
Right, and who is ultimately, I mean, because you've got the neurologist, the ophthalmologist, and then the primary vet who are all kind of part of this. So is it whoever you saw last is the one you're contacting?
To me, it would probably be, if you're thinking it's related to the prednisone, it's the last one that changed the dose on the prednisone.
Okay.
Right? Because, but then it's like, I don't know that this was related to the prednisone, and had they just have said, look, back down on the dose, we don't think this is related to the prednisone, or maybe if it is, like, go back to your regular, which is what it sounded like in the notes, was
right.
that they were told to go back to the regular veterinarian, but I don't know that happened.
Yeah, this is an issue that comes up with specialists. These are neurologists, and so they are focused on the neurology. They didn't get to do an MRI. And the ophthalmologist ruled out primary ocular disease. So they said, well, we have to treat it as a potential inflammation of the optic nerves. Then things started to happen that are not neurology. Yes, the patient was under their care. However, they was also under the care of other veterinarians. and now we have a non-neurological problem going on and the general decline of the dog. At some point in time, and I sympathize with an owner who's wanting help from a neurologist, but at some point in time you go, I'm taking my dog in. This dog ultimately succumbed to a profound thrombocytopenia, in spite of the fact that it had been given high doses of steroids, which is the treatment for that. So we probably had a bleed initially into the optic, the nerves, not the retina, but behind that, and that's what caused the blindness. That was the first sign of our disease process.
Right.
So it's hard to blame the neurologist for saying now the dog is declining and we're vomiting and we're having bleeding issues and all of this. It's forget the neurology. Let's get some help, and which ultimately happened.
That did ultimately happen. But the question is like, did the neurologist in your mind, because we're going to go off of what we have, right?
Right.
Make it clear that hey, this we've done what we could do. This is not something we've increased the steroid.
Right.
If you're still seeing symptoms, you need to go back, which is what I had initially when I read this thought had happened, but that is not exactly what we heard in testimony. That's why I was having a little bit of an issue, is that it sounded like the 11th is when they lowered it back down because of the potential side effects, and that they recommended having the dog seen by the primary care veterinarian. But the dog didn't do that until the 17th.
Right.
So it didn't sound like that actually got relayed to the owner. I mean, maybe they said it and the owner didn't hear it, right? We were in this emotional state. Like, I get that.
Right.
But I feel like that's the time period, and I just don't know if I can. I wasn't there, I didn't hear it, so I don't know that I can say one way or the other, but I think that that's where the crux of this is coming from, is that she was watching her dog decline and not feeling like anyone was doing anything about it.
Especially when you're going to specialists, and I mean, she was
doing... referral back to your primary care, the best option too. It's like, I sent you to a specialist for a reason. Why are you coming back to me? It's like, this was above my level anyway.
So when she did call
the primary care, they were like, I don't know, you're under the care of the neurologist.
I have a hard time with a specialist saying, go back to your primary care. It's like, you're the specialist. We elevate to you for a reason. And then for you to say, well, I'm done, I'm going back to your primary care, that's not a good answer to me.
Issues are going on, then we need internal medicine.
Exactly. I mean, would that have fixed anything? Would that have saved anything? Who knows?
I think
the ITP, I think it's the platelets, but still, right. I don't like the referral back
despite
to primary care.
Despite the steroid use, the platelets.
I think the referral back to primary care, though, could be the right answer if the symptoms that were arising could have been handled at a primary care.
Yeah.
Right? It's not that these couldn't have been handled there. The neurologist probably knows, I don't deal with this kind of stuff. I don't know either.
Exactly.
Now I need to go back because I don't do that kind of work, right?
And I don't believe the neurologist, if they were aware of what was going on in the rapid decline of this dog, would have said, well, let's just treat this symptomatically. There's a disconnect there.
Well, that's why I say it seems like it was more with front desk staff than the actual doctor, because there were some pretty significant declines in this dog. That we can attest, like that we know, that probably should have been addressed before. It's just, who does that actually fall to? And I don't know that it falls on the neurologist, but I mean, we could do similar to the last case where it doesn't rise to the level of violation, but there's a letter of concern issued and that we need to make sure that issues are being addressed and follow up, whether that's referral somewhere else or back to the primary care, or you're bringing that dog back in.
Right. And that your front desk person is relaying important.
Yeah. But I just don't know if there's enough to go
before you go back to a primary care. It's like you need to make a phone call to that primary care and say, is this something you can handle or no? And then make a decision on internal medicine or something. But to throw it back on the primary care, which is going to take another week to make an appointment, and then the primary care gets in to see them and is like, I can't deal with this, send it internal. Mm-hmm. I think if a specialist is going to go back to primary care, it's like you need to call that primary care first and say, are you willing to accept this case back?
I agree with that would be best practice. I don't know if that's a violation.
We have the need to refer, and it's going to help improve the quality of the case, so I think they're going to be held to that same standard. And you're referring to me, it's probably not going to be the best referral. I'm a good doctor, but I'm not a specialist.
No, but again, if the issues that are being seen, it's not
specialist symptoms. It's not the acute blindness that we're referring back to you.
Right.
It's the side effects that they were seeing that were progressing that they're referring back to you, right? But,
that
so it changed.
Side effects, though. That would have, again, burned a lot of time because we missed something deeper.
Okay, so are you leaning away from a letter of concern and more of a violation? Because I just don't know where the violation would be.
No, I'm not leaning towards a violation.
Even a letter.
I'm wondering if it's even a letter of concern. I'm just saying I don't like that referral. But I don't know if that's a letter of concern there.
I mean, I think the concern for me is just that this clinic was being told that there were issues and nothing was happening.
Yeah.
And we have, a dedicated pet owner that is doing all that she can. And, again, she's following the advice and just
so I'll make a motion in the case of 24-102 that we dismiss this case with no violations, but issue a letter of concern that this owner was calling in regularly with increasingly concerning symptoms, and the communication back to the owner was concerning as to whether they were getting the information they needed. Okay. You look like you're puzzled.
Yeah, I'm on the fence on this because the real world of specialists, that's not how it works. I agree with you, and unfortunately, in the world today of specialty practice, this is what happens, and I feel for owners in this case.
But we're here to make sure it doesn't happen, too.
Right, no, I agree, that's why I'm on the fence.
I mean, it doesn't happen when I call my specialist. If I call my cardiologist and I say something's going on, they're like, not me, go back. Like, they're clear. They don't sit there and not answer my concerns. Right. They just tell me what I need to do. So I don't know. I think that's why, because I am on the fence, I couldn't go to any kind of a violation here. I just don't see where there is one. But I would say, as a specialty practice, you need to be concerned about your communication and how well you're communicating. And that would be my letter of concern.
Okay. You and your staff as well. Okay, so we have a motion to dismiss this case and issue a letter of concern. There's
second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. So if there's no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you for being here today. We are now going to go down to number 9, which is 24-132 in regards to Ivory Wildflower DVM. And Tracy, if you'll, this is a straight to the board one. So
yes.
Okay, so read the
background.
And yes, Dr. Wright is recused on this item. We do still have a quorum.
Case 24-132, the complainant is the Arizona Veterinary Medical Examining Board. The respondent is Ivory Wildflower DVM. At the June 21st, 2023 Arizona Veterinary Medical Examining Board meeting, a consent agreement was offered to respondent due to repeated premises violations found at the January 7th, 2019 and March 29th, 2023 premises inspections conducted at Brown Valley Community Vet Clinic. Staff was directed to reinspect the premises within 12 months. On April 23rd, 2024, a follow-up inspection occurred. At the April 17th, 2024 board meeting, the board voted to open an investigation after reviewing the results of the premises inspection and expressed concerns about the overall cleanliness of the premises. These concerns included, but were not limited to, combustible materials such as paper and boxes that were allowed to accumulate inside the premises, floors, countertops, tables, sinks, and any other equipment or fixtures used in a veterinary premises were not maintained in a clean condition and were not sanitized after contact with an animal or animal tissue. Animal compartments appeared to not have been cleaned and sanitized, and a large number of cats at the veterinary premises. So again, this case was not brought to the investigative committee. It was brought directly to you for review and consideration.